Hello, friends, and welcome to our continuing work with Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Video Commentary. I really had hoped to continue the story of my life here, but I was not really able to open the computer even yesterday. So here it is, July 6th. And as a little segue into today's work, I will just say that DK tells us that language is a handicap. And that we are not to accept from him belief in the verbal inspiration of what is written, but of course we are to pay attention. He tells us we will also be guided in our work by health and circumstance, and that we will ever remember that masters are made through the achieving of mastery and not through obedience to any one person. Sorry. You will bear in mind that I, your teacher, am not constantly aware of your physical condition or daily doings. He says, I concern not myself with the affairs of the personality and those misguided aspirants who claim that the masters are forever telling them what to do and are guiding them in their personal affairs are still very far from the grade of accepted discipleship. Maybe I said it. I know a person who is asking Sanat Kumara what she could have for lunch. Okay. He goes on. You will remember that the light will shine into a mind that is self-controlled and free from the mental dominance of another mind, let us say, such as we found in the labors of Hercules or Gemini, as the modus operandi of the false teacher, Bucyrus. He goes on, with these provisos clearly understood, let us pass on to the enunciation of certain principles and to a consideration of what it may be possible to do. Okay, so that took us to the end of program 5, and we're beginning program 6 a couple of days later. So And as you know, I'm being very sparing in color coding things and enlarging words and all that, hoping that that will facilitate the flow of the reading of Master DK's text, and also what I might have to say associatively. See, that's what I do, is I go along. Certain things he says trigger in my mind or memory things he has said elsewhere. And I try to bring those other things into relation with what the text has just said. And in that way, we study, I often call it spherically. We begin to gather the whole teaching together. Okay. First, he says, let it be constantly remembered that the new discipleship is primarily an experiment in group work, and that its main objective is not the perfecting of the individual disciple in the group. Now, let me say that this is a very hard saying to many who think they are entering into DK's supervision so that they may be perfected as an individual. But it will require of them a relinquishment wherein they discover, or from which they discover, that the group and its success is far more important than whether or not they as an individual achieve success. But of course, the more the individuals in the group do achieve success, the better for the group. So the two things really go hand in hand. Now, he goes on to say, I regard this statement as basic and essential, that the new discipleship is primarily an experiment in group work. And not in the perfecting of the individual disciple. But let me say that it's as if when moving from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, we are moving from individual emphasis to a group emphasis. DK goes on, the individuals are intended to supplement each other and complement each other. I'm thinking, what is the difference between supplementation and complementation? In geometry, it has to do with angular relationships, supplementary angles and complementary angles. But here the meaning is different. with supplementation, we often supply what the other individual does not have, and they supply what we need. With complementation, the different qualities of the group members enhance our qualities, and our qualities enhance theirs. So, repeating, the individuals are intended to supplement each other and complement each other, and in the aggregate of their qualities should eventually provide a group capable of useful spiritual expression, and one through which spiritual energy can flow for the helping of humanity. I will say that DK always has his eye upon the group as a whole, and it is the effect of any individual upon the group which may attract his attention, but the main purpose is to create the useful, spiritually expressive, spiritually radiatory group, which can be far more powerful in the helping of humanity than the individual alone. DK goes on. The work to be done is on the mental plane. I will say that so many people seem to forget that and imagine that their aspiration is sufficient to help. But remember, there is a veil upon the etheric levels called the veil of aspiration. Preceded by three other veils, the veil of impulsion, the veil of distortion, the veil of, is it separation? Something like that. And then the veil of aspiration. Aspiration is not enough. I know that the students of Master DK are frequently criticized for being too mental, okay, but they really are trying to fulfill the Master's injunctions here to work from the plane of mind. And from that plane, to help rid themselves and their groups of glamour, and also by working in the right way from the plane of mind to rid themselves and groups of illusions, especially once the Antikarana is in process of being built. DK goes on. The spheres of service of individual disciples remain the same as before, but to their differing fields of individual endeavor, there will be added a group activity and life, which will become more clear as time elapses. So I'll say that the individual serving in his or her chosen area can begin to call upon the group energy, and even when serving individually, apparently, considers himself or herself a part of a serving group. This whole question of group emphasis is easily spoken, but difficult to achieve. And the masters have to be very patient indeed as they watch us trying to achieve it. DK goes on. The first objective, therefore, to weld and unify the group so that each person in it can work in close mental rapport and spiritual cooperation with others. I'll say that this probably involves a degree of mental and spiritual telepathy. And will mean that the group will follow a similar purpose, even though the means of expressing aspects of that purpose may and will differ. And the disciples in such a group are to be left free to pursue their response to group purpose. DK goes on. This inevitably takes time. And the success of this new effort on the part of hierarchy will depend upon a non-critical attitude. Criticism, we know, is one of the major causes of glamour. Let's say, if one was to list three major causes, there would be suspicion on the first ray, self-pity on the second ray, and criticism on the third ray. And then, of course, those major rays of aspect can combine with other rays of aspect, attribute rather, excuse me, other rays of attribute. And either augment the problem or perhaps balance it. So repeating, DK is saying that this welding of the group into a unified group so that the members can work in close mental rapport and spiritual cooperation. Well, he says, this inevitably takes time. And the success of this new effort on the part of the hierarchy will depend upon a non-critical attitude. and the outpouring of a spirit of love on the part of each member of the group. It sounds so simple to say, but much patience certainly is demanded by hierarchy as the group tries to fit itself to these requirements. Okay, we're just about on page 9 here. And DK goes on. This, this non-critical attitude and the spirit of love. Well, think about the groups that you belong to and how successfully these two requirements are being expressed. Okay, page 9, DK goes on and says, this will be fairly easy for some disciples to achieve, but very difficult for others. And I'll say that it's probably the ray type that determines whether this outpouring of a spirit of love is easier or more difficult. DK goes on. So many high grade people today, have an overdevelopment of the analytical mind. Now, that, if we've read Letters on Occult Meditation, is one of the reasons why the new esoteric schools are being developed to correct this overly developed concrete mind, the unstable emotions, and the weak etheric physical apparatus. Anyway, it's often a point of pride with people that they have this highly developed analytical mind, but it can be a great obstruction as well. DK goes on. As time goes on, however, and if real effort is made, the welding process will make much progress. Think about welding, you know, and the heat involved in it and what it can accomplish just on an outer level. So DK is saying the welding process will make much progress. And maybe, let me say that we have experienced this in our group work over the long term. maybe this is something that we have observed experientially as a particular group in which we may be a part, has worked for a long period of time. So DK goes on and saying, this, therefore, is our first effort, as it is the first effort of the group of every master and the achievement of itself. Group unity. Group unity. Group unity. I'll say that when we use those words as kind of a touchstone, the obstacles to group unity do appear. And we ourselves may be those who are responsible for introducing such obstacles to group unity. So let's go on. DK says, every disciple has to learn to subordinate his own ideas of personal growth to the group requirements, for in order to have a coordinated group, I'll say, you know, under the new seventh ray of coordination. So, repeating, in order to have a coordinated group functioning as a serviceable unit, and this is this is the tough one. Some disciples will have to hasten their progress, and others in certain directions, and others have to slow down theirs temporarily to the pace of the majority. Well, I'll say that when we study the rules of the road, this very requirement is present. Some move ahead, he follows after. Some move behind, something like that. He sets the pace. So there are different capabilities among the disciples, and it is, in a way, a sacrifice that is called for. Extra pressure on those who are moving too slowly. They have to spur their horse forward, and restraint on the part of those who could move, so they think, much faster, but have to hold back to be relevant to the pace of the majority. And I'll say, you know, that is one of the tests, to adjust oneself to the proper pace of the group. It may not be for the individual the ideal pace, but for the group, it is the correct one. Now, DK says, this will happen automatically if the group identity is the dominant factor in the thoughts of each disciple, and desire for personal growth and for spiritual satisfaction is relegated to a secondary place. And I will say that this is all governed under the law of sacrifice and involves, shall we say, decentralization. If one's eyes are all the time on oneself as a person, this will be difficult to achieve, to put personal growth in a secondary position. So let me say that thinking in terms of the group, easily said, must be achieved. And you can ask yourself, how well you do that, how well you think in terms of the group. DK goes on. The groups within each ashram are intended to work together eventually, just as the various departments of some great organization work together effectively as a unit. I'll say that when I was in the Arcane School headquarters group, we used to at least talk about the functioning of the fingers on one hand. They work together, or are meant to work together, with such a degree of coordination. DK goes on. They must function smoothly and intelligently. So I'll say that the ideal is thereby sounded. And yeah, I trust that something is coming up here. I get a little worried when I look at the microphone button and wonder whether a little bit of green is showing up in the right way. That's my hope, of course. Otherwise, it's a lot of wasted time that has to be redone. So anyway, like the fingers on a single hand working together effectively as a unit, functioning smoothly and intelligently. DK goes on to say, this will be possible when the individual members in the groups and the individual groups lose sight of their own identities in an effort to make this experiment of the hierarchy successful. So, at whatever level we find ourselves, we are not necessarily to concentrate only on that level, but to look ahead at the next level, which includes the level at which we presently find ourselves. So the individual looks towards the group looks towards the ashram looks towards the greater ashram, and the greater ashram looks towards Shambhala, and on it goes. The Aquarian Age offers us opportunities for experiments in the attitude of inclusiveness. Going on with DK, the feelings, reactions, wishes, and successes of the individual most emphatically do not count. That's a bold statement, isn't it? Let's repeat it. The feelings, reactions, wishes, and success of the individual most emphatically, bold word, most emphatically do not count. DK goes on to say, only that is regarded as of moment, which will further group effort and enrich group consciousness. He continues, only that, for instance, this is a good lesson, only that, for instance, attracts my attention, which brings more spiritual power to my group of disciples, or which increases its light or dims its radiance. So I will say that DK, in looking on at us and of the looking on at the disciples that he gathered together, thinks ever in group terms. And he will notice whether there is an augmentation of illumination or whether there is a dimming of illumination, let's say because of the attitude and behavior of a disciple or certain disciples. I'm recalling now that he was definitely thanking or complimenting one of his chelas for the harmony which this chela brought to the group. And other gifts, of course, come in. That's part of the supplementation and complementation about which we just read. So all of this decentralizes our attitude towards the little personal self. And when we grow up spiritually, we're quite happy to accept this decentralization. When we're fixated, often ambitiously, upon the personality, we are not happy to accept decentralization. And then DK goes on and says, you need to remember that I look at my groups of disciples always subjectively and as a group. It is the total radiance which I see. It is the united rhythm which I note, and the united tone and color. It is the sound they collectively emit, which I hear. And for those, I'll say, for those who want the master looking at them personally at all times, this kind of statement, this kind of sentence, will be disappointing. But then again, such disciples are, DK would say, still far from the grade of accepted discipleship. I'll repeat this from DK. You need to remember that I look at my groups of disciples always subjectively and as a group. It is the total radiance which I see. It is the united rhythm which I note, and the united tone and color. It is the sound they collectively emit, which I hear. Well, let me ask, does this adjust our ideas about our own discipleship and our group work and possible group identification? Well, I hope so. I hope it creates a beneficent readjustment in the ideas in the ideas of all of us about the new type of discipleship to which we are learning or could learn to adhere. DK goes on, may I reiterate? Well, this will be disappointing to some He says, may I reiterate that in one sense, your individualities are of no interest or moment to me, except insofar as you raise or lower the group vibration. Well, I'll say that for the self-centered disciple, aspirant disciple, this is a hard saying. You would think that at least the master has to have some kind of interest in who I am, but his interest is within the context of a different point of view. Group welfare, group illumination, or a lowering of group vibration. And so we see too what kind of responsibility we have to the group. And that responsibility is increasing as the new discipleship takes hold. He says, going on, as personalities, you matter not to us, the teachers on the inner side, as souls, you are of vital moment. And so let me ask, which are we in our identification and our experience? Do we experience life as a personality? Or do we really have the experience of being the soul? You know, just a little aside, I happened to see a film, a war film, directed by Mel Gibson, who is an actor who quite intense and has various religious identifications that are very strong. And it was all about a hero in the Second World War who was a conscientious objector. And the way he was raised, he just refused to kill. He refused to carry a rifle. And he was court-martialed and ostracized, and finally they led him into battle as a kind of medic. Well, this man, in one of the most fierce battles for the dominance of Okinawa on the way to ensuring a Japanese surrender, did something extraordinary. He somehow saved the lives of about 70, 75 of his wounded comrades. dragging them to the under fire, to the edge of a precipice, and then with his hands bleeding increasingly, he lowered them down the precipice, one after another. And he always had to go back for one more, for one more, for one more. Some of he received the Congressional Medal of Honor from Harry Truman, President Truman at the time. It was an astonishing feat of bravery and the preservation of principles as well. Now, this man was mocked for so-called talking to God. He would always go into some kind of inner state and say, okay, if that's what you want of me. And this unbelievably heroic action, he could have been killed at any time, but somehow he was not. And he saved. The number is astonishing when you think of how many he lowered by rope over that precipice. Now, I don't know if this man was talking to God, but certainly he was in touch with a higher power. His soul, he was able to align as a soul. And something spoke to him about the need to save lives and sacrifice. In the film, he even penetrated a Japanese warren of rooms or bunkers, and he gave aid to a wounded Japanese soldier. I mean, this takes your breath away when you think about acting as a soul. I still am amazed at this feat of honor and bravery that he accomplished. Anyway, when we begin to act as souls, there'll be no telling what we can do. And increasingly, as Master Moria tells us, human beings will fly with each other to accomplish the good. The time will come when a real connection with the soul will be a much more universal condition. Anyway, a little bit of an aside. I found it so thrilling. I almost watched the film by accident. I wasn't intending to, but I learned something of what it means to commune and obey the inner impulses of the soul. Okay, DK goes on here. Each disciple in the group of any master may have many weaknesses and limitations. I'll say this is just a recognition of fact, but with supplementation and complementation, those weaknesses can be offset. So DK goes on and says, these weaknesses and limitations, these act as hindrances to the others in the group. But as souls, such disciples are somewhat awakened and alive. I guess that means they've penetrated into the cosmic ethers a little through Antikvarana building. So they are, in DK's words, somewhat awakened and alive, and have achieved a certain measure of alignment. So it is with all of you in my group. As souls, I cherish you and seek to aid and lift, to expand and enlighten. But let's say that DK certainly puts first things first. And that is much to the surprise of his disciples. Of course, in compassion and seeing where the problem may really have originated, he did, after all, give some personal advice, which, if followed, would have, of course, facilitated the effectiveness in service of the group. Okay. He says, I would like here to emphasize one point as we consider the individual in the group and his group relations. Watch with care your thoughts anent each other and kill out at once all suspicion. I'll say that's a first-rate cause of glamour. All criticism, I'll say that's a third-rate cause of glamour in general. So kill out at once all suspicion, all criticism. And let me say that if you compare that phrase, kill out, with Master Hilarion's little book, Light on the Path, you will find great similarities. And Master Hilarion, if anything, has more of the first ray, I would estimate, than Master DK. Anyway, of Master Hilarion, it says he is one of those who takes the kingdom of heaven by storm. So this is a first-rate quality, along with his monadic fifth ray. So repeating, watch with care your thoughts, anent each other, and kill out at once all suspicion, all criticism and seek to hold each other unwaveringly in the light of love. It sounds so simple. As he says somewhere, to think outwardly towards each other with love, something to that effect. Hold each other unwaveringly in the light of love. And he goes on, you have no idea of the potency of such an effort or of its power to release each other's bonds and to lift the group to an exceedingly high place. Now here, I'll say that he's speaking from his own experience, and it is not quite yet the experience of most of us. Repeating, you have no idea of the potency of such an effort or of its power to release each other's bonds and to lift the group to an exceedingly high place. I'll say that from this, we are learning that it is true love that lifts, and that's not the same as desire. Desiring another person for what that person might bring, no, it's not the same. DK goes on, by the pure light of love for each other, you can draw nearer to me and to the teachers on the subject of side of life and arrive more rapidly at that gate which opens on to the lighted way. Pure light of love, bringing us closer to the master and to the teachers in general. So it seems like a very foundational requirement. He goes on and says, you have the opportunity to demonstrate to each other the scientific value and power of love, regarded as a force in nature. Make this demonstration your endeavor. Well, we can certainly see that Master DK's ashram holds the quality of right human relations. Repeating what he said, you have the opportunity to demonstrate to each other the scientific value and power of love, regarded as a force in nature. He goes on, you will thus release for each other all that is needed to bring about potent and vital changes in the life patterns and purpose of the group members. Now, let's say here he's going on about what love really is. If we love, we are contributing to releasing each other and the group into a new state of potency and consciousness. If we love, he goes on to say, love is not a sentiment or an emotion, nor is it desire or a selfish motive for right action in daily life. I'll say, because of course we know that rewards come with right action. Going on, he says, love is the wielding of the force which guides the worlds and which leads to the integration, unity, and inclusiveness which impels deity itself to action. Going on, as these are important statements about love, love is a hard thing to cultivate. Such is the inherent selfishness of human nature. So I'll say that, you know, he's realistic about where we stand, and the intransigent condition of human nature. Love is, I'll repeat this, well, you see it. Love is a hard thing to cultivate, and such is the inherent selfishness of human nature. Now think about that statement. He goes on, it is a difficult thing to apply to all conditions of life. And its expression will demand of you the utmost you have to give. And the stamping out of your selfish, personal activities. Well, these are thoughts we must really, really bear in mind. It is the requirement. And if we find ourselves in group work without the accompaniment of love and with it wisdom, we will fail and our groups will fail. We have to learn to overcome irritation with each other, which of course arises in group form. Let's see here. Yeah, I'll do one more paragraph, and you know, these are a series of shorter programs, but for various reasons, I have to do them that way right now. DK goes on, disciples in the group of a master have to love each other with intelligence. Let me say that suggests a Venusian quality, love and intelligent mind. So repeating, they have to love each other with intelligence and an abiding strength, and thus release that light and power, which will eventually make the group of effective value in the world. It's sometimes hard, isn't it, to combine what we normally call love with an intelligent attitude. This will be the gift of Venus to us. DK goes on, as I work with you in the future, I shall not wait to wrap up the truths I have to say to each of you in such a way that they cannot hurt. We can say, of course, that we know the old adage, the truth hurts. So he's, you know, declaring his intention here. He says, I shall not in the future consider your personality, feelings, and reactions because I count upon the sincerity of your purpose. So let me say, he gives credit to people for having that sincerity of purpose. And he says that he will be more direct, perhaps, than eventually he proved himself to be. Maybe it was the ongoing compassion. That's possible. So anyway, let's let's bring this down. And we finish with program number, I'll bring it down. Right. So, gosh, this isn't program one at all. That should have been program five. Goodness. And now, let's see what we have. Here, so maybe I finally have this clear. It was the end of program six, and on the 6th of July. And we ended up very close to page 11. And we're beginning program seven in Discipleship of the New Age, volume one, section one, video commentary. And we're beginning on the cusp of page 10, 11. And if all goes well, today that I'm able to continue. So friends, love and blessings from Tuya and myself and the whole communications group of the Moria Federation University of the Seven Rays. And I hope your studies along these lines are profitable. Certainly you can begin to see how tremendous an offering Master DK is making for us at this time. I'll do my best to continue shortly. Bye for now.